Membership Wisconsin Varsity Bear!
Perfect music to get our program started today. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Great to have back Mike LaCrone. He led the University of Wisconsin Madison bands for 50 years, and PBS Wisconsin will be doing a special about Mike next week. And with him in the studio today, Holly DeRuyter. Holly is one of the filmmakers for PBS Wisconsin. She's the one of the history producers for PBS Wisconsin. She worked on this film, and so it's great to have her along as well to talk about this new film, which they are calling Mike LaCrone, Wisconsin's Showman. So as we talk with Holly and with Mike about the film, we're going to be talking about Mike's history and memories here a little bit about working here at the University of Wisconsin, some of his experiences, and I certainly hope you'll join in as well. What does the band bring to your experience as a Badger fan? Did you play for Mike here at the UW? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Holly DeRuyter, welcome.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having us.
Great to have you here. Mike LaCrone.
Always good to talk to you, Larry.
always good to talk to you. Well, what's it like to be a topic of a film?
It's humbling. it's intimidating a little bit because you didn't know what Holly was going to put on, and once you see it, it's like, did I really do that and say that? But it's a pretty good film so far as accuracy is concerned. I like what she did with it.
Oh, I do too. I've had a chance to view it, and I just loved it. Actually, it's a wonderful film. How long has that project been in production, Holly?
It has been a year.
A little over a year.
And there are so many ideas in the film. Where did all the ideas come from?
Well, when we were looking at making this project on Mike, a big thing that we needed to think about is there's a lot of things that people know about Mike, and we wanted to make sure we covered some stuff that people didn't know about him. So we wanted to go all the way back to his childhood in Indiana and kind of learn about, like, how did Mike LaCrone become Mike LaCrone? So we cover his childhood and kind of learn about, you know, where his love of music came from, where his hard work, his dedication for hard work came from. And those were things that we thought were really key to telling his story.
Well, and you surprised me many times, and I really enjoyed it. I was thinking when you were talking about Mike growing up and so forth, you played with your dad. I mean, your dad got you playing.
Yeah, my dad was a high school band director, and I grew up knowing nothing but music. I mean, that was it.
And started with percussion.
I've told the story. He said, we want you to get started on percussion. You don't have any teeth there, so you can't play a wind instrument. So he started me on percussion so I could learn a little rhythm, and then I eventually became a trumpet player, sort of a trumpet player.
Well, I tell you what, the one shot in the film, I don't want to give away everything in it, but it's so much fun to talk about it. You were a performer with your dad.
We did a little, what we called a vaudeville act. We toured all over northern Indiana, particularly. You know, we weren't doing national things, but it was a great experience, not only from a standpoint of being in front of an audience and knowing how an audience works, but it also was just fun for he and I. We just enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, and I loved how you'd switch hands while you.
Explain how
you did that. What did you, well, you're both playing the trumpet, and you played his.
I fingered the instrument on his horn, and he would reach underneath and finger the instrument I was playing. And most people say, well, that shouldn't be too hard, but what people forgot is we were playing in harmony. We were not playing in unison, so we had to learn the separate parts. So people were always a little bit amazed at that. It was one of those things that looked harder than it really was.
Yeah, well, it looked hard enough to me. Yeah, that's for sure. Howie, tell me, what was your approach to the show? Did you guys, did you sit down and work close with Mike, or did you guys?
Yeah, we met with Mike early on, just to, I didn't know Mike Leckrone before I worked on this project. So we met with him, and, you know, the whole project kind of depended on how open he was going to be with us. And mm-hmm. you could not ask for a better documentary subject. He let us know that anything we'd want to do, he's happy to help us, but he's not going to like it.
Pretty well put, huh?
I love that.
Mike's a very humble guy, so yeah. The idea of a film crew following him around for almost a year, I think, wasn't his choice, but he was very open to us and helped us out a lot, and that's why we made such a great product, because he was so open and shared so much with us.
Yeah. Well, he's a nice guy, but in his
but,
own...
There's
in,
a nice guy, but... Yeah,
in his own words, he's a yeller, too.
Yeah. Oh, I am. Ask any of the kids that came up through the band. They'll tell you.
Well, and, you know, that's part of your... Probably a little bit of your growing up. I mean, you worked for your grandpa, and...
He was a taskmaster. He was a taskmaster. I learned the concept of work ethic from him maybe more than anybody else I ever had in my life. I mean, my dad was pretty tough too, but I got a lot from my grandfather.
Oh, and that's kind of, I mean, when you're a band director, a marching band director, you probably have to yell a little bit, don't you?
I've never figured out how to do it without. If there's a way to do it, I didn't learn it.
but the whole process, I think, Mary, I thought you did a really nice job of bringing out how Mike worked as a director. And then with the interviews you have with some of the players, that really brought that home.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time talking about the voices we wanted to have in the piece, because there's so many people that have been impacted by Mike, not only members of the band, you have the fans that go to the sporting events, and you have people who didn't even go to the University of Wisconsin, they weren't even in the band, and they just love Mike Leckrone because he is such an amazing performer and person. He's just really personable too. So that was important, that we show how much Mike has had an impact on the state of Wisconsin.
You know, I was thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking about my football tickets right around me. I have some of the folks that are around me went to the University of Wisconsin, but quite a few of them actually did not go to the University of Wisconsin, but love the band and love the team. And, I mean, they've been coming in the good years and the bad in terms of the teams. At least, and I can relate to that very well, just from the few people that are around me at a game.
I think one of the things Holly captured was what I'd like to think of as the Wisconsin spirit.
Yeah.
She captured that because that's a very important part of what I do, and it reflects on whatever success the band has had, is because everybody sort of got caught up in that whole Badger thing, and I think it's been a very strong part of what I've done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I really enjoyed as a young guy was going to the Coliseum to watch the hockey, and then you and Bob Johnson got together, and the band played a critical role in that whole performance, the hockey's team's successes, many ways.
Yeah, Bob was not a shy person in terms of telling me what he wanted to have happen with the band, and which was great, because I mean I felt like we developed a really good relationship with each other, and he was doing what he's done, but he knew that the band played a part, and he let us know that the band know, and that was very important for us to sort of capturing the spirit again that was going on.
And that really, I think, at least according to the film, that kind of had an impact on the band in terms of, putting it in the spotlight a little bit.
Well, it put the band in the spotlight, and then as soon as you do that, then the band started to feel good about themselves, and they wanted to start getting better. They realized they were in the spotlight, and they realized, you know, we just can't halfway do this. We've got to go all out. And that was a reflection of what Bob taught, and then what I wanted to try to get instilled in the band.
Talking today with Mike Leckrone, who is recently retired as director of the UW band, and Holly DeRuyter, who is a PBS Wisconsin history producer and one of the producers for the video or the film you're going to be able to see pretty darn soon, as a matter of fact, November 26th, right?
Yep, next Tuesday.
7 p.m. PBS Wisconsin on Tuesday, November 26th at 7 p.m. It's called Mike LaCrone, Wisconsin's Showman, and we're talking about the film, and we're talking about Mike and his history here. And we'll give you a chance to join in now. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Did you play for Mike? What are your thoughts about a band and its role in athletic and sporting events? Love to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Dave Potratz, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Mike LaCrone and Holly DeRuyter. Holly, a filmmaker and PBS Wisconsin history producer. And she was one of the producers on the film they put together called Mike LaCrone, Wisconsin's Showman. And, of course, Mike's in the studio with us as well. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Derek in Madison, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Derek.
Hello, Larry, and hello to Mike. I was a tuba player under Mike in the late 80s, and I just wanted to say hi and share a quick story that probably is not in the documentary.
Okay.
I was a guy who played football all through high school, and I thought I was, pretty good in good shape and a decent athlete. But I was really surprised that marching band practice during registration week with a tuba was harder than any week of practice I had had in high school, even during two-a-day tryouts. And Mike was certainly instrumental behind instilling that fitness and I recall he was turning 50, I think, in 86 when I was a freshman. And up on that platform out at the practice field, he was unimpressed with our knee bows and thought we were pretty lackadaisical in dropping to our knee to salute the crowd in that aspect of playing. And he let us know it by saying, "You need more energy." And he commenced doing knee bows in his white shorts on top of a plywood platform repeatedly. It was kind of emasculating. Thought we were young bucks and to turn up the game a little bit. And thanks for everything. Playing under Mike was life-changing. And even though I never made it to a bowl game, my first road trip was a chartered jet to Vegas, playing in front of a lot of boosters out there, marching in a parade. Which was just a blast, getting there before the football team, leaving after, and seeing all the Badger fans coming from everywhere to support the team. Thanks for the memories.
Thanks, Derek. And I'll tell everybody, since you're a former tuba player, to talk real slow. I know who you are, Derek, so thanks for calling.
Thank you, Derek, very much. Let me tell you a story, Mike. I don't think I've ever mentioned this on the air, but when I was in grade school, a grade school teacher came to me and said, "Would you play? We need a tuba player. Would you play the tuba?" And I was, in my head, was going to be a professional basketball player who had no need for playing the tuba. And I didn't do it. I turned him down. And when I got here and saw as a student and saw the tuba players and a big regret of my life was turning down that opportunity because I thought, you know what, maybe I'd have been good enough to be doing what those tuba players are doing.
Yeah, and the great thing about that section is they have their own identity, and they make it fun, and I tease them a lot, but they're still it has its own unique personality, and you'd have done well. I think you'd have done well as a tuba player.
Well, that's one of my big regrets. I can tell you that for free. Oh man, let's go to Joe in Madison. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. First time caller here. I grew up in Iowa City, Iowa, and my brother played in the drum line at Iowa. And I just wanted to say how much we always appreciated having the Wisconsin band come to Iowa City. They breathe so much life into the games that they played at. I even had the pleasure this would have been fall of 1990, the Wisconsin band came and played at my high school, Iowa City High School. And we hosted the band members, several of whom I later became my colleagues here in Madison. But they were so gracious as guests, and they were so enthusiastic playing at our high school football game and razzing the opposing team because they sat in the stands with them. I always had so much respect for the band, and when I moved to Madison about 18 years ago, it was very exciting to be able to see them firsthand and already have that identity established with the appreciation of what Mike had done, not just for the Badgers, but for the Big Ten in general.
Oh.
Well, Joe, thanks a lot. I really appreciate those comments. I really do. That means a lot when you mention it from the other vantage point. It makes it
yeah,
special.
Yeah, that does make it special. Joe, thank you so much. As you're listening in, you can join in, too, with your own experiences or comments. I hope you will at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you as we talk about this film that's going to be showed. Mike LaCrone, Wisconsin Showman, November 26th, Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on PBS Wisconsin. So I've had a chance to see it. Don't miss this. It's really, really good. It's really well done. And Holly DeRuyter is one of the people with me in the studio today that was a big part of it. Was there anything, Holly, that really took you by surprise when you were putting this together?
Something that we left out of the film we just didn't have time for that I thought was really interesting about Mike and his wife Phyllis is when they got married, Mike was in school at Butler University, and they lived in a trailer park across the street from the Indianapolis 500. And not only
nice,
that...
quiet neighborhood.
So they could hear the cars riding around, but then in that trailer park there was a lot of people tied to the trackway. Mike, you met a lot of famous race car drivers, right?
Well, A.J. Foyt's probably the most famous. He was used to bounce my daughter on his knee, and he was this big, tough Texan, but he was just a pussycat when it came to kids. And all the mechanics, Jimmy Bryan was a race car driver that I got to know. These are all names from from the 60s, but they were just fun people to be around, and they most of them lived in the trailer court, but they had homes. Most of them had homes in the south of Phoenix or in other places. But to hang around those guys was a lot of fun.
I imagine it was. You excuse me. You knew a lot. You got to know a lot of not only race car drivers, but a whole lot of other really famous musicians.
I've been blessed being associated with the concert alone. There have been so many great musicians that I've had cross the stage, and I know Holly, she included it in the film, not a direct relationship, but when I was a kid, I had a great opportunity to spend an evening with Louis Armstrong. I stood maybe 6 feet away from him for an entire evening, and that was a life-changing experience almost, because as it points out on the film, what it showed to me is here's a guy who was playing in Rochester, Indiana, a little no-place town, and I happened to go visit him, and I never saw anybody who was more enjoying and anxious to play music. I mean, that whole idea of this is a second-rate place that we're playing, it never showed. He was so enthusiastic about and I thought, boy, if he can do that in the middle of Indiana with nothing on the line, it serves as a great model.
You were, and just talking about you know, you're 50 years here, but you had 10 years prior to coming here as a band director.
I was at Butler University. I was first as a graduate assistant, then I was assistant band director, and then before I left, I was the director of the marching band at Butler. So I had a pretty long career there.
So 10 years there and 60 years, or 50 years here, so 60 years as a band director. Yeah.
Go ahead and say it. You don't look that old.
What?
No, I know better.
Well, you didn't look that old in this last concert either. You were spinning around.
It was fun.
It was a lot of fun to watch and see you in person for that. Well, let's talk a bit about the concerts. The concerts, and we've told this story before, for those who haven't heard it, how do they get started?
Well, it's happened about 1974. We always ended the school year with nothing. I mean, the band would play for the last basketball game, the last hockey game, whatever it was. And then they just disintegrated. There was nothing going on. So the kids in the band came up with the idea, well, at least let's have a celebration at the end of the season, get everybody together. And to give a reason for the celebration, we'll have a concert, and then we'll have a party. That was the party was the main thing. That was the main. But so we did, and I suggested, well, let's try to sell tickets. And so we sold tickets, I think for $1 in the earliest days. And there were kids in the band who said, don't try to sell tickets because nobody's gonna want to pay to see the band do a pep band concert. But I did anyhow, and we had about 400 people show up at Mills Hall for the first time. And it was so successful, and particularly our fans, who were a lot of hockey fans, as you mentioned, a lot of football fans. And they said, well, you got to do this regularly, make this our first annual. And so the next year we did, and we filled Mills Hall. It was over capacity, actually. I was going to say capacity, but we sort of cheated a little on some of the fire rules, I think. And then we moved to the field house after that. Yeah. And at the field house, it just gradually started to creep and grow. And we added a second night. And then when we had the great Rose Bowl experience in 93, 94, we had to add a third night. And it's at that point that I started to feel like you got to step up the production values. So production things kept rising with everything we could imagine, guest artists, pyro, all sorts of lighting things. And it was one of those monsters that got out of hand. And it was great. It was great fun to plan, and it was great fun for the kids to do, because they felt like it was something very special, that they felt like they were in show business, even though most of them were doing something else in their major. But they felt like we're in show business here for a couple nights.
And, you know, as a professor here, many of my students were also played in the band. And I remember, too, that you gave them the opportunity to sing and perform in other ways as well.
They sang. They put together little acts of their own that they would perform. It became sort of a community process. And it again, it's one of those things that just grew out of nowhere. And it was just fun to see it happen.
Oh, man. Orville in Madison will give you a chance. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Mr. LeCrone.
Thank you, Orville.
Thank you very much for what you've done for the university. I've been a student and a faculty member. I've been here since 1965. And I want to thank you especially for what you did when the football team was winning.
Well, we remember those days.
Yeah, those were special days when the band kept the spirit alive. And you're a hero, and the band is very special, and you'll always be remembered. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Orville, thanks so much. And he brings up a really good point. There were, when the band was, or when the team wasn't very good, let's be kind. Well, they weren't very good.
Yeah, they lost about two seasons worth of games in a row.
the band became the thing.
It was a great opportunity for us to. But I told the band at the time, you've got to be good. You can't just keep. You have to be good. You got to take that step up so that, since we are sort of filling a void for the time being, that people think it's worthwhile for us for them to be band fans.
And that fifth quarter, how did that get started again? Talk about that.
Well, that happened early on, too. I bands have always played a post-game show. Every Big Ten band that I've ever known played a show. Yeah. But basically, you marched out and you played tunes that you'd already played. And as I mentioned, and it's really pretty true, I got bored. I really got bored because we just did the same thing we'd already done. So I suggested early on, well, let's add a few crowd participation things. First thing we did, the very first crowd participation we did was a beer barrel polka. I mean, I'm thinking Wisconsin, they know how to polka, beer barrel polka, everybody can do it. And sure enough, we played it, and we had to coax some people to dance, but they caught on almost right away.
Yeah.
They were primed.
You just need to get a few people out there
that
everybody else joins.
And we kind of sold it a little bit. We told some of the band members, you know, you start to dance, and they'll catch on to what's going on. And they did. And then it just grew. We just kept adding crowd participation things. This wonderful song that was laid on me called You Said It All. When you say Wisconsin, you said it all. That was sort of an accident, too. We just started playing it, and the crowd was reacting to it. So we just kept it in and kept promoting it as much as we can.
And you got the Wisconsin in there in place of the beer.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was a smart thing on my part because I didn't want it to be like we were a product endorser, so it worked so well. And I just told the band, stand up, turn around, and say when you say Wisconsin, and the three syllables worked.
They sure did. Oh man, Richard in Dickeyville, let's go to you next. Hi, Richard.
Yes, how are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I'm just driving through Wisconsin and your interview with Mike, and I just had to call in because I discovered that Mike have a lot in common. I don't know that we ever met. I just retired as a professional musician from Chicago Symphony, also as a professor at Northwestern University.
Wow.
And I grew up in northern Indiana in Fort Wayne. And what I wanted to say is that through my growing up years, high school, the marching bands that I played in were a big, important part in my life and a big part that made me a professional musician. And it's an experience that I've always carried with me. I think it's a wonderful thing, the marching bands. In my career, I have met many professional musicians, Americans, who got their start and their interest in their marching band. And it's a terrific thing to do for your youth. So just thought I'd put that little plus in there for you.
Well, I love to hear that because it's something that obviously all of us who are musicians preach. You know, you learn to love this music very early on, and it'll carry you through for your whole lifetime, whether you become a professional or not. And I think it becomes an important part, and I'm sure you felt the same way. It became an important part of what you did.
It sure did. Not only in music, but, you know, you associate with other students that have the common interest of the marching band. It's just a healthy thing in your life growing up.
Richard, thank you so much for calling. Yeah, I'm thinking about my own daughter now. My daughter plays for she's a percussion. She plays in a really good high school band, the Lakeside Lutheran High School Band, and they go on some trips kind of sometimes all over the country because they're such good marchers and players. And the not only the playing, but the friendships and so forth that I see her making are going to be with her for her whole life. You know,
I was in marching band in high school, and it was a big thing for me too. I mean, I don't do anything professionally with music now, but I think it is something that sticks with you, the work ethic and the connections that you make. I think it's really good for young people.
Well, I can tell you that it would have been a nice thing to have had a soundproofed room when she was getting started with the drums.
Oh, yes. I had a son who was a drummer. I understand fully.
But it's a lot of fun to hear her play. Now she's learned a whole lot. The Rose Bowl came up, and I wanted to get back to that because I know, you know, you went a long time without making it to a Rose Bowl, and that was something you wanted to do.
Well, even from the very beginning, when my first experience with the Big Ten band, I knew that the Big Ten, in those days, it was the only bowl game available. So you either won the championship in Big Ten, or you did no bowl. And so it became very early on, this is a goal that I want to see happen. And I started thinking when Wisconsin got a little bit better year to year, I thought, well, it's going to be a nice progression to eventually I'll be in the Rose Bowl. And sure enough, 25 years later, I was there. But I think that anticipation and waiting for it, I think it made it even more special. And I think it did to the fans, too. I think those people who waited those 25 years to go to the Rose Bowl, when it did happen, it was such an event that I've tried to describe it, and I just can't. I mean, just how momentous it was and how exciting it was for all of us who had that first opportunity.
I remember a colleague of mine, John Fett, rest his soul, the Rose Bowl that Pat Richter played in. He was a student then, and he said, well, there'll be another Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I heard that story too.
And it was a long, long wait until the next one. Man, oh, man. Meg in Wisconsin Dells, let's give you a chance. Hi, Meg.
Hi. Well, I was in high school in the late 70s and was lucky enough to have members of our former members of our high school band be in the UW band. So we were invited to band day. And if you don't know what that is, it was high school bands were invited who had members in the UW band. And you got to go and practice during the day and watch the UW band practice. And then we got to play with the band. And it was just the most exciting experience. We were just in awe, of course, watching them practice on the field and then getting to play with the whole stadium full of these high school bands. And I just wanted to say thank you for that because it was great.
Well, thank you, Meg. Yeah, Band-Aid, it's still a big deal, and yeah. I think it's a big deal for everybody who's involved. It's fun to watch the spectacle, and it's fun to see the kids come in.
And a lot of those kids probably wind up, or a good percentage of them, wind up at the UW marching band.
They do. And that's been it's been a great recruiting device for us to get people to see what it's like and to understand that the kids in the marching band are just like they are. I mean, they're just fresh out of high school and still learning.
Yeah, and you had a rule on that. Every Wisconsin kid got a chance to try out,
yep.
Right?
That's right. That's right.
So there was you always had a chance.
Yep. It's always available.
Oh, man. Sue in Chautauqua, I believe it is, emailed. She's a Badger football fan, but the halftime show at Camp Randall is the real reason she loves to go. From someone who can't walk and talk at the same time, she's always in awe of watching the band put on such a great show. She says, Mike, you're going to be missed. Thanks for all you've done for Wisconsin.
Well, thank you.
On Wisconsin. You know, in that, as you watch the band, the step that you kind of designed, well, not kind of, that you designed, it was really interesting to me in the film to have one of the student band members talk about how that step is done.
The execution of it.
The execution of it.
Yeah, and it's there's probably more to it than most people think. I mean, it's not just lifting the leg up. There's various components where the foot is supposed to be placed, you know, the tension that's supposed to be on the foot, that little stop at the top, as we call it, where you hesitate before as you bring the foot up before you bring it down. And that part of the step probably takes the longest to teach. I mean, when you bring a group of freshmen in, it takes a while for them to catch on. Once they do, I mean, it's not as unnatural as it might look to you, but once it takes them a while to get that feeling as before they can execute it the way we think it should be done.
James emailed that every time he's attended a Packer game or a Badger game, he sees the marching band. It takes the excitement level up a couple of notches. He loves watching the band. They bring so much life to whatever event it is. And for true Badger fans, the band is as big as any of the teams.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah, so yeah. James says, thank you, Mike. And the energy is there. You know, even sometimes my daughter for her Lakeside band, there'll be community. They kind of warm up before their big events, and they go to a lot of community events in June, especially fairs and whatnot, or special events where they march. And oftentimes there'll be six, eight, kids from the UW band, or maybe 10. It just depends. And the excitement level automatically ramps up. Because they seem so full of life and with so much energy. How do you teach that?
You don't. you do it by teaching them that to do things well. And once they catch that, once they do and they experience it for themselves, that to do something well gives you a real special feeling about yourself. That once you've done that, but you can't shirk on that part. You can't just say, well, it's good enough for now. You can't ever say that. And I've never been known for for not being able to criticize.
Well, and many band members in the film talked about, well, Mike likes to yell. but they every single one of them, in the end, they know that has made them better band members, better people.
It's been the gratifying part of what I do, and the fact that they do experience that is it's been the best part of my job.
It's got to be, if not the best, it's got to be a close second. Yeah. But it is number one. Well, I tell you what, what are you going to do now?
I'm doing it. I'm talking about the band wherever I can. I've done some traveling. I'm going to continue to do that. I'm going to keep involved with music. I keep writing arrangements. I love writing music. I didn't have as much time in the last few years to do it as I would like to. I'm doing some adult education teaching. I've done some through continuing education at the university, and I'm just going to keep being very very involved in music because I just enjoy doing it all the time. I'm doing a lot of things with local dramatic or drama groups and doing stage productions, and I'm trying to be involved as much as I can because I just love doing it.
Well, I wouldn't have imagined it any other way. it's such a pleasure, and that composing part is another really fascinating part of that film. So thank you so much.
My pleasure.
It's always great to talk with you. Mike LaCrone, retired now as director of UW Bands, and our other guest, Holly DeWitter, who is a PBS Wisconsin history producer and one of the producers for this wonderful film, Mike LaCrone, Wisconsin Showman. And you're going to be able to see it Tuesday, November 26th at 7 p.m. Thank you, Holly, as well. Well, great to be able to talk to Mike. You know, we've talked once a year for many years, and this year we've gotten to talk twice, which is great. And I hope we have a chance to talk again.
I do, too. I do, too. It's always fun.
Look forward to it. And I'll tell you what, we're going to switch gears on you now, and we're going to we've talked a little bit about history, and one of the things about history is your own family history and your ancestry. And coming up, we're going to be taking a look at tracing your own roots with DNA kits, among other things. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.